You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe so you get the podcast once it goes live. You get that push noty on the phone, and you can rock and roll whenever you are ready. We will talk to Mike Helfgott coming up on the show later on. He is one of the best NFL draft bettors I have ever met, and he hasn't been doing it that long. We'll revisit the draft and all the bets Mike made. He hit 60%. But a lot of those losses were hedges or long shots. He had Kellen Mond 7-1 to go in the second round and just missed it. So this guy has centralized and specialized. And I always talk about bet what you know. He puts almost all of his bankroll into the NFL draft. He did it in 2020, made a shitload of money. And he did it in 2021 and made more money. So we'll discuss a lot of the bets that Mike made and a lot of the movement in the market that he saw. Lots to get to about the NFL draft. A lot of wild swings in the prices. A lot of wins on our end. And also live betting and how live betting did at Bet Online. I spoke with Dave Mason. The results probably as you expected, but maybe not as much as you would have thought. We begin, though, with the Kentucky Derby. It is the 24 to 48 hour window of every single year where Americans think all of a sudden they are horse experts. And I am not one by any means. I rely on Uncle Kirk and the Staggy and Maiden Focus. Those are the people that know a lot about the horse industry. They have forgot almost half the stuff they know. Very sharp people, all three of those guys. I just sort of follow the leader. And then I'm pointed toward the direction that I end up going toward. I really liked the 9 horse, Hot Rod Charlie. And I was pointed in that direction by Uncle Kirk. And then on Friday, Eddie Olchek is on WGN Radio saying he likes the 9 and the 1. I think he had the 1 instead of the 9 on top. He had Known Agenda and then Hot Rod Charlie. So I dug deeper and I keyed Hot Rod Charlie into all the stuff that I did. Problem is, the race was about 150 feet too short. The 9 came banging on the outside. Hot Rod Charlie was going to win the race if it was a little bit longer. But Medina Spirit, pretty much going all the way, wire to wire, 12-1, and another win for Bob Baffert. Medina Spirit, Mandaloon, Hot Rod Charlie. That was your trifecta. Essential Quality, the favorite, finished in 4th. A $2 exacta paid $503, a 50-cent try paid $848, and a $2 superfecta paid almost $19,000. I did not win. I didn't expect to win. It's always that event every year where you jack yourself up way too much. You bet more than you probably should on something you don't really know, and then you're like, oh, well, I didn't expect to win anyways. It's always that same defeatist attitude, but we always jump into the pool. Funny how that works, isn't it? Our buddy Dan Aspen had Hot Rod Charlie plus $2 to finish top 3. He also found a market against Essential Quality, a head-to-head. Charlie plus 150 against Essential Quality. So those are some winners there. I did see 3 tweets, though, that made me laugh out loud. Lauren Jaffe, who will be on the show Thursday at the Spin Zone. Doing all this studying and reading to bet on a 2-minute race seems a lot like trying to find the perfect porno. Fair. At Joe0670, Joe Ostrowski. Another Derby donation. Refused to bet Medina Spirit, even though wife and daughter told me to bet the pink horse. I'm sure I won't hear about this all day. Rob Pizzola, at Rob Pizzola. The comparisons between Bob Baffert and Tom Brady are bang on, considering both are cheaters. Ah, I see what he did there. But again, Medina Spirit, the winner, and we overthink this every single year. If I would have just bet on the Baffert horse, I probably would have won. It's like betting on the Buccaneers before the playoffs last year. Well, they have Brady. Brady wins a lot. I should have been that dumb. Just bet on Medina Spirit. And I did have to laugh of all the experts, all the horse experts, I should add, on the broadcast coverage, NBC, Saturday night. Not one of those people picked Medina Spirit. The only one that did was that nerd with the tie, Steve Kornacki. Actually, I like Kornacki. I think he's pretty good. He circled Medina Spirit and said, this is the horse I'm going to bet on because of the value. And then my man posted a ticket for $100 to win on Medina Spirit. So you tip your cap to go on national television when you're sort of out of your element. You're not a horse racing handicapper or an analyst, and you're the one that gets it right. Props. NFL draft, we swept the board. It was awesome. On this show, Mac Jones under 17.5, J.C. Horn under 13.5, Kyle Pitts under 5.5. Also had a 5-0 spot on Nesson. We had Pitts first non-quarterback taken, Waddle under 11.5, Fields over 7.5, which wasn't really all that close. He goes 11th. But it all came down to Pitts for me. And this was one of those slow crawls to the finish line. Because I sent the neighborhood the text on Sunday and then tweeted it out right away. Play Pitts every which way we can. At Chicken X Dinner. Whatever under draft position you can find on Kyle Pitts, let it rip. And the market at that point in time, DraftKings under 5.5, minus 40. FanDuel under 5.5, minus 66. PointsBet under 5.5, minus 170. I explained this last Tuesday on the show. I said, look, I get that that's a little steep. And I don't like to really lay anything minus 135 or higher in baseball and hockey. I think the juice kills the more juice. So when I tweeted out minus 140, minus 166, minus 170, some people are like, wait, that's sort of out of our range. I said, not in the draft. Because what happens in the draft is the bookmakers get the information and these markets will shift. The year Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson went top 10, 2018, there was a prop 2 weeks before the draft. Offensive lineman taken in the top 10. Over 1.5 was minus 220. By the day before the draft, that prop was minus 900. So I have seen these markets fly, butterfly, wide open. Thursday at 4 o'clock, FanDuel under 4.5, minus 500. FoxBet under 5.5, minus 333. PointsBet under 5.5, minus 370. Off the board, BetMGM and DraftKings. At 6:30 Eastern, before the draft, a local Boston bookie, Pitts under 5.5, minus 800. And here we go, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. PointsBet under 5.5, minus 10,000. I was still a nervous wreck, though, heading into that fourth pick.
With the fourth pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Atlanta Falcons select Kyle Pitts.
Yes! Let's fucking go! Woo! Let's go!
Watch, listen to this phone go off.
Let's go! Huge. You You can't fake that emotion, and you can't imagine what it's like to have the whole block getting hot when Kyle Pitts goes under 5.5. Of course, I had a couple people slide into the DMs. You said he was going third. No, I didn't. I said, let's put a flyer on him at 40-1. I couldn't breathe, though, Thursday night. I had a couple cocktails to sort of lighten the mood a little bit, rip the pen. Needed Pitts to go 3, 4, or 5. And the Atlanta Falcons come home. They stay inside the SEC and take Kyle Pitts. Huge day. Huge day for the show. Wrote it up everywhere, talked about it everywhere. But it was a slow roll. Because you give that out on Sunday, and it doesn't cash until Thursday night. We saw some strange future movement, too, around the time of this Pitts movement. I'm tracking all this stuff right around the start of the draft. The Denver Broncos went from 60-1 to 14-1 to win the Super Bowl at DraftKings. And that was off of a report by Mark Schlereth, I believe, who said that Aaron Rodgers was all but coming to Denver. Is it true? I don't know. But bookmakers aren't going to wait to figure that out. They're going to move it. They're getting ahead of the curve. A couple of the boys had some huge hits. Joey Romano, plus 525 on the Bears to take a quarterback in the first round. Will Brinson had J.C. Horn to go to the Panthers, plus 750. And three listeners sent me tickets on Justin Fields to be drafted by the Bears. 14-1, 14-1, 16-1. There you go. I spoke with Dave Mason at BetOnline. They actually won in their pre-draft markets, but they gave back half of it in the live. Because that live life is tough. You're fighting the sharpest bettors in the world. The average Joe isn't betting on the live stuff. They're not. They're betting pre-flop. It's the people that come in and try and shut your lights out. Those are the ones mostly betting the NFL draft, especially at BetOnline. But I thought it was really cool. Here's an example of what the board looked like betting live at BetOnline. They had the 8th pick overall in the top left corner. Fields plus 175. Horn 4-1. Surtain 4-1. Jones, Slater, Smith 6-1. Any other player plus 375. And that thing is flashing and moving up and down until the pick is in. Also on the page, total offensive players first round, over under 18.5. Total defensive players in the first round, 13.5. Will a running back get drafted in the first round? Yes, minus $8, no plus 550. Will the Bears draft a quarterback in the first round? Yes, plus 230, no minus 300. Will the Patriots draft the quarterback, round number one? Yes, plus 100, no minus 30. And these markets fluctuated throughout the night. The Patriot price went from plus 100 to minus 180 after pick number 13. They picked 15th. By the time it got to 15, the Patriots were minus 900 to take a quarterback first because you have to adjust and you have to make the proper movements. The future has arrived. And I can't wait to see what the books add next year. I don't know that we're going to see live wagering at DraftKings and FanDuel and PointsBet, MGM. I don't know because I don't think they're going to win money. It's a ballsy move by BetOnline, but they didn't win. And I don't think this is a market that you're going to win long term. You might win a draft or two here and there, but the information is too strong. And once a player goes off the board, it could create a domino rally where all of a sudden one of your bets has, you know, the favored side, the side that you need, could go from plus 180 to all of a sudden it's minus 400. And you did nothing wrong. You're just booking bets, but something drastically changes, like a player falls out of the top 10 or a team trades up, and then all of a sudden you're screwed in so many ways. There was some movement, too, in a lot of the season win total markets. The markets moved against the Jags and Jets, which usually always happens, stayed about the same for the Niners and the Patriots, and moved up on the Bears. On Thursday's show, I want to dive deeper into those adjustments, and I want to talk about my favorite player props. FoxBet put up rookie props on a lot of the heavy hitters. Lawrence, Wilson, Lance, Pitts, Fields, Waddle. Jones. A lot of these guys have props popping up. And I think it's really cool when you attack these markets. To baseball, Jacob deGrom is on the hill tonight for the New York Mets. He is minus 200 against the St. Louis Cardinals. The game is on the road. So a $2 road favorite usually implies about a $3.50 home favorite or more. I don't know why I went down the deGrom rabbit hole today. I was working on a story for Nesson. I talked about the Red Sox series price against the Tigers, and I mentioned that Pivetta has won 4 of 5, or the Red Sox, rather, have won 4 of his 5 starts, and he even cashed at plus 210 against DeGrom. So I'm like, well, let's see what DeGrom has done this year. If you would have bet on DeGrom in every start this year, you are already down 5.2 units, which, believe it or not, is not even the worst mark in the league. DeGrom minus 5.2. Drew Smyly for the Braves, minus 5.4. But the worst pitcher to back this year so far in Major League Baseball, South Side of Chicago, Lucas Giolito, minus 6.4 units if you've bet on him in every start. White Sox are 1-5 in Giolito's starts. But DeGrom, it's amazing. The guy is so fucking good, but they don't win when he pitches, at least over the long haul. Since 2018, the Mets are 38-43 when DeGrom starts. But you'd be down 30.5 units if you bet on him in every single game. That's preposterous. And you look at his stats since that time. In 2018, he's 10-9 with a 170 ERA. But the team goes 14-18 in those starts, minus 10.4 units. He had a 170 ERA. 2019, if you bet on DeGrom in every start, you lost 14.9 units. He was 11-8 that year with a 243 ERA. And he wasn't even the worst pitcher to bet on that year. DeGrom was minus 14-9, losing at minus 195, minus 200, minus 210, minus 250. Chris Sale, hold my beer. Minus 19.2 units. Sale lost that year at minus 240, minus 245, minus 250, minus 280, minus 350. 2020, DeGrom 4-2, 238 ERA. Mets went 8-4 in those 12 starts, broke even. 8 wins, 4 losses, break even. And in 2021, DeGrom 2-2, with a 0.51 ERA, but the Mets are 2-3, down 5.2. The Mets have 2 losses this year when DeGrom starts, minus 260, minus 270. He allowed 2 earned runs combined in those starts and still lost. God. Ariel Epstein wanted to add this to the party. She, of course, one of the hosts of The Morning After on Sports Grid. DeGrom has actually gone under 4.5 in all 5 starts, under 3.5 in 4 of those 5 starts. Whew. I saw a live spread Sunday in the NBA that I have never seen before. The Pacers were -58.5 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. And if you bet on this, you probably have a problem. Imagine logging into the app and going, oh man, I got to get involved here with all the bench guys in the game. It's a lot of points. The Pacers won 152-95. That's a 57-point win, but not a cover if you laid 58.5 live. That reminds me of the time Joffy was live betting one of those bowl games. It was Auburn against Purdue. I think she took Purdue +20.5, +24.5, +28.5. +35.5, +42.5, got destroyed. I don't get involved with live spreads that are over really 10 points, 20 points. You got people firing 58.5 point spreads live. And I guarantee you a lot of people laid that number. Because I think the Pacers were up 60. But how do you know what's going to happen in the fourth quarter of an NBA game with the backups in? I don't get it. You're not betting, you're gambling at that point. The Action Network, sold for $240 million to Denmark-based Better Collective, which was pretty much their plan all along. Build up the brand, create the content, acquire clients and customers, get all those emails and cell phone numbers, then sell the database to a company with big money. $240 million. The money continues to roll into the space. And Alfonso Strafón is a great follow on Twitter. He went back and found a quote from the old CEO of the Action Network. Quote, "If I have 8 million qualified users spread around the country and each one can legally bet through a book and there's an affiliate fee and a percentage of lifetime money, it's like happy fucking birthday." And as you can imagine, a birthday present that's a big check worth $240 million, I would agree, that's a pretty nice birthday. And the last thing here before we get to Mike Helfgott, there's a nationwide chicken wing shortage going on right now. And I was wondering over the weekend why I got 12 wings for like $16. I thought to myself at the time, that seems a little expensive. Well, it turns out, and I read this in a couple different newspapers, but the story with the best quotes was the Washington Post. Not that I like the Washington Post. Kevin Dooley, he's a restaurant owner in Virginia Beach. He said, quote, "We go through 24 cases of wings a week. Right now, I'm getting shorted 8 cases. I haven't run out because I go to the Restaurant Depot and make up the difference, but they're limiting the amount of wings you can buy. 3 cases here, 2 cases here. We're having to scramble." There are a lot of challenges in the restaurant industry, and the meat processors are having a hard time keeping up with all of the demand. And the prices are rising drastically. Dollar a wing prices in lower income areas are all of a sudden not available anymore. And they do fluctuate a lot. Wings tend to get really expensive in the NFL playoffs. They do this by design because people are in the bars in a normal year. January into February for the game, Super Bowl, of course. Then the prices decline after. But this year, the prices haven't slowed. In February 2021, wing prices hit an all-time record at $2.71 a pound. But the prices kept going up. They went up 20 cents the week after that, and they haven't slowed down. Obviously, Americans like their wings, but this is not good for business. There's a place in Norfolk, Chicho's Backstage, $15.50 for 10 wings. That's up from $12.50 the week before. It's a $3 raise in a week. And then one other restaurateur had a quote in here that the supplier was supposed to get them 400 cases a week and only sent 260. I ordered 30 cases and got 20. There has never been a chicken wing shortage ever like this. Serious problem. Chicken dinner is not a proof of the chicken wing shortage. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, Mike Helfgott at mhelfgott on Twitter. I honestly think of all the people that I thought would be draft experts, you would have been like 500th on that list, buddy.
Yeah, it just started last year, actually.
How did you find yourself in this madness and in this mayhem that is the draft? Because you've made money now, NFL Draft 2020, NBA Draft, and then this past NFL Draft. How did you discover this market?
Well, it was the world's madness and mayhem. Going crazy during the pandemic, needed a distraction so bad, no sports. The draft was the only thing on the horizon. I was always a recreational player, probably broke even the last 10 years, just sort of playing, not taking it too seriously. If a game was on, bet it, you know, that kind of player, like to bet it live. And so I just started listening to every podcast I could about the draft, figured out who was smart, figured out who were the guys that kind of had scouting acumen and also were well-sourced, and just started consuming, you know, all that kind of information. The books were really slow. The books were not up to date. They would post numbers and they posted them early and they really weren't consistent with what the experts out there were saying, you know, and this is such a unique market. It's all driven on narrative. People start betting something, so the books have to react. It's so much different than betting a game where algorithms and, you know, it's time tested that these lines are give or take a very small percentage. These lines are right. I put every all my expendable sort of, you know, all my bankroll, as it turned out to be, on it last year. had an almost 100% ROI last year. So this year just, you know, went a little crazy with it.
You are saying the same things that multiple bookmakers tell me about the draft. In fact, it's funny you brought up the word algorithm, because I had somebody say, we don't have an algorithm who goes fifth overall. We don't have one who goes 7th or 10th or 11th. It's all based on information. And they have told me repeatedly that they are scouring the web, they are checking out, compiling mock drafts, and they are following the newsmakers and the newsbreakers in the industry. You texted me on March 3rd or 4th, hey, take Mac Jones under 18.5. And I fell asleep at the wheel. You texted me the next day, hey, psst, it's 17.5. That number on draft night, dude, was 3.5.
Right. It's got nothing to do with me scouting the player or having an opinion on who should go where. That's just listening. You know, it was like Matt Miller said something, Tom McShay said something, and all of a sudden it was like, this guy's going to be a top 10 pick. And a lot of people talk about how there's a lot of, you know, people just blowing smoke and it's lying season. And I'm sure that goes on. But when you listen carefully and you know, you can figure out who you can trust to listen to, where it's coming from. You know, a lot of times they'll say, you know, I've got this source saying this, and it's just all about following the information. I mean, it's a lot of work. It sort of became a chore by the end, and I sort of became a little obsessed. So I'm glad it's over. But yeah, I mean, it's out there.
I went back and looked at all the bets you texted me personally. And full disclosure, all the draft shit I played was from you. You went 7-1. I'm sure you did more. I'm sure you had to hedge at some point. But how did you do on the draft?
Yeah, the total was 26-17. But a lot of that was hedging, because that's the other great thing about this market. Numbers change so dramatically based on narrative, which ebbs and flows. You can find yourself on plus numbers on two players. Like, you know, the example, as you know, with the running backs, Najee Harris opened as an underdog. He was plus 130, plus 125 for a while. I mean, we jumped on that early, even though all of the experts that I respected said they thought he was the best running back. They weren't really getting heavily into mocks at that point, but rankings were out there. And at plus money, that seemed like a no-brainer. At the end, ended up going off at more than 2-1. So how do you not hedge in that situation?
The reactions that the books have to have are drastic. It's not like a football game where, let's say, Team A is a 7-point favorite against Team B, and somebody bets $1,000 on Team B. That line, it's probably not even going to move off 7 at a $1,000 bet, especially if it's a recreational player. But I'll tell you what, if a recreational player walks up to the window and bets $1,000 on Justin Fields over 3.5, over 4.5, that market's going to 5.5. It might go to 6.5. We saw his market close at 8.5. So money talks, money walks, and information kills when it comes to the draft. Is that a fair statement?
It is. And, you know, the part about you have to be on a screen constantly, right? And that's what I meant when I said I became really obsessive about it, because these numbers are changing fast and you can lock yourself in at pretty much a guaranteed profit, you know, if you're willing to just check those screens once an hour, once, you know, a couple times an hour, even.
Even the J.C. Horn stuff, like, I don't mean to have you on here and pat your ass and tell you how great you did. You did do great. But I'm curious about your process, where you text me a week before the draft, 10 days before the draft, and you go, hey, Sammy, look at J.C. Horn under 13.5. He goes down to 12.5. The market was 10.5, and he ends up going 7th, right? He ends up going 7th in the draft.
8th, I think.
Oh, okay, well, 7th or 8th. Either way, he cashes. How does somebody who has only bet the draft for one full calendar year so good at it?
Well, to answer the question about Horn, it's just a feeling. You know, I felt like it would just kept hearing, because it went from Sertan being the clear CB1. And the hilarious thing about this is no games are played. There's no new information. Yet the narrative changes so much, right? Like, Sertan was the clear CB1 for a while, or it was Sertan and Farley. Then all this medical information comes out about Farley, even though he hadn't played any games since then, right? All of a sudden, Farley maybe isn't going to be a first rounder. Who knows? Then Horn becomes the hot guy. And then it's all of a sudden, well, maybe Horn, maybe it's not Sertan. And it became too much. I saw that 13.5 number. And it's the position, right? Cornerback is such a premium position in the NFL. The same thing happened with this cornerback market last year with the cat that went to the Jaguars. Henderson is his name. I can't remember his first name. He wasn't considered much. Then all of a sudden he went 9th. And I could just see the same trajectory with Horn and figured, this is only going down. We better jump on this now.
What did you make of the fluctuations for Justin Fields? 6 months ago, he's two or three in the draft, and then he falls all the way to Chicago. Chicago trades up to take him. What did you make of his valuation, I guess, over the course of the market, and what did you think about him falling all the way down to Chicago?
I mean, I honestly don't know what to make of it, right? He can read defenses. He can't read defenses. He didn't go through progressions. He did go, you know, there's so much conflicting information out there. And believe me, Ryan Pace is not smart enough to have created a rouge in which this guy falls and he can play for him. So that didn't happen. You know, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, as a Bears fan, psyched to have a quarterback, you know, with his ability, concerned that the Bears were the ones that ponied up to get him, right? And who's going to coach them? But that's a whole different podcast.
I was looking at some of their markets too. You know, before the draft, Chicago's average win total was 7.5, and a lot of the juice was on the under. There really hasn't been that much of an adjustment on a lot of these win totals. I mean, you look at William Hill has 7.5. The juice is now +105 on the under. All these books, the American books, William Hill, Unibet, Sugar House, DraftKings, FanDuel, they haven't changed the number. They've just sort of shifted the juice. That's a hard team to handicap because I don't think he's going to start. I mean, we had to wait for Mike Glennon to sputter for a month before we got Mitch Trubisky, and the Bears just never make the right decision. So I don't think we're going to see Justin Fields early in the season, and I don't know that I like the Bears that much better, at least in the coming season. You know what I mean?
I don't see how they're good next year. I really don't. The fact that these guys kept their jobs after the Trubisky, you know, debacle is just – I have a hard time getting past it.
What are some of the biggest changes you saw in the draft position market? And, of course, that's the market that gives a number to a player. We talked about Mac already, 18.5 down to 3.5. But where else did you see a huge range?
There were a lot of middle opportunities, right? Like a lot of opportunities where guys' numbers were just 5, 6, 7 points off. That's another – great way to play draft props. The Notre Dame guy that fell so much, the linebacker, Owusu-Koramoah, the linebacker market was all over the place. The edge market was actually all over the place. And I guess that makes sense just considering that, you know, they weren't considered stack positions at this draft.
There were a lot of players too. And I know that we didn't discuss any of these, at least over our text exchanges, but there were a lot of players that their numbers opened up. And these were middle guys. Not talking about, you know, the first round, second round guys. A guy like Seth Williams went from 229.5 to 136.5. Kellen Mond went from 170.5 to 81.5. And Quinn Meinerz, that offensive lineman, I think he played at Whitewater. Mm-hmm. He went from 122.5 to 59.5. I think that's our next challenge together. And by together, I mean you do it and you let me know. These guys, Mike, they're moving almost 100 points.
Yeah, I think that certainly in Mon's case, it doesn't really matter what the number is. You just got to think like what round, like how many quarterbacks are there? How many teams have to worry that somebody else might draft one? I got one of my big losses were taking Mond and Davis Mills to go in the second round at really big numbers. I had Mond at 7-1 and Mills at 5-1, and they went 2-3 picks off each. You know, Mond ended up going, I think, 66. Davis Mills, like, 65 or maybe vice versa. I mean, they were right there. So I just think, you know, if you know enough teams need a quarterback, in Mond's case, it's going to go higher than that number because so many teams came into this draft needing a quarterback.
My buddy Mitch Moss in Vegas played this market. He played the exact team prop, which, again, you've heard me talk about this before. The more candy in the aisle, the more likely you are to leave with candy. They were betting on – likely destinations for Kyle Trask. And they started at about 23 and went out to about 70 and just played $100 on all these teams that have older quarterbacks, played the Steelers, the Patriots. They also played Tampa Bay, though, with Brady.
Nice.
Mitch had Kyle Trask to be drafted by the Buccaneers at 33-1.
Oh, my God.
A lot of the markets last 3-5 years were head-to-heads. Here are the top two corners. Here's a price, -135, +115. This explosion of all these different markets, it only gives – I think it gives the advanced bettors and the ones who do the homework like you do, I think it gives you even more of an edge because if you're behind the counter trying to maneuver and move all these markets, you're going to fall asleep on some of them. That's a lot of work back behind the book.
They must take a bath.
That's why you can't bet it in Vegas. They cut the cord Thursday morning, buddy, like 9 in the morning on draft day. You can't bet anymore. They pull the plug on top of the limited options you already have to begin with in Nevada, because like you said, bookmakers don't want to take it because they get killed. They pull the plug 10 hours before the draft.
That makes sense to me.
If I was a bookmaker and it was my job to make money, some books across this country, their job is to acquire customers and hopefully over time they turn a profit. A lot of these books, DraftKings, FanDuel, they're not making money right now. They're acquiring customers. That's why you get the boosts and the bonuses, because they want to get you in the door and get you betting. A lot of these books in Nevada, they don't take it because they don't win at it. And if my business model was based on ROI and my hold percentage, I'm not taking draft props on Sean Wade at 168.5. No shot.
Right. So do you think that there's, you know, the future isn't long for this?
If they give you a bankroll, if somebody surfaces the area and finds you, I don't know. I'll tell you what, if you were betting at a shop like William Hill, you would be either limited or kicked out.
So that's the way they handle it, right?
They would look at what you do, and they would look at the way you bet. Because you're not a guy who has a couple Tecates and decides an hour before the draft you're going to bet. Somebody that bets the draft in February and March and early April, a lot of the books, they won't take your information and move the numbers. They're just going to kick you the fuck out.
That sucks.
Which is a different conversation for a different day about how do you shape your market. You know, if you were betting props at Circa, they would want to see what you're doing because they're going to go, oh, I wonder what Mike likes. It's all about strategy, but all of these books are different. And I think the more we understand that, the more we can utilize it and the more we can learn from it. It's just, it's a fascinating market. I can't wait to see. Like if you were looking, let's go out on this question. If I were to ask you, what way would you love to bet the draft that isn't available now? If you could kick this out a couple of years and we could expand the Rolodex, what market would interest you?
Oh man. I think competitions. I think FanDuel had one. I think that could become more popular, like a DFS style. But you'd have to think, you know, even just this conversation as we're talking, they're going to have to, you know, be reshaping this. It's going to be evolving.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, you kicked ass again. That is three drafts in a row where you made more money, and you would have made more money if you didn't hedge. But you put yourself in great spots, and I think it's fascinating that somebody who's been doing this in such a short-term window has such a vast knowledge of the right player, right price, and just knocking this stuff dead. And you made me look good. You did all the heavy lifting here. There's a bottle of whiskey coming your way. Thanks for coming on the show, and keep kicking ass, man. This stuff is fascinating.
Sam, thanks for having me on. As always, thank you for all those kind words.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Mike Helfgott for hopping on. We will have him on every single draft. NFL, NBA, will have him on early and often. This guy doesn't wait till the night of the draft. He bets early. He had Mac Jones under 17.5, under 18.5. Market close 3.5. He makes money because he studies this like it's a full-time job. Record check, 120, 114, and 5. We are down 3.7, and nothing in the hopper, nothing baseball. Still taking a little bit of time here. Baseball's been tough. Playoffs getting ready in the NBA, NHL. We will be involved, especially in the NHL playoffs, especially with series price bets. And coming up on the show Thursday, one of our favorites, Lauren Joffe, will join the show, and nobody knows where things will go. You just never know with a wild card like that. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you Thursday right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken dreams held together with glue. I gotta keep on trying till that day comes true. I know that all my life I've been tired and blue, but still I keep on fighting. I got too many things left to do. You see, my brother told me so. You be